Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Raha Lastapa. This week is Bobby Mair. I think you're going to enjoy it. Recorded at the Warwick Arts Centre some time ago. If you enjoy these podcasts, you might can come and see them live. Go to richherring.com/gigs and find out if I'm doing one near to you. You can also go to gofasterstripe.com and buy a variety of exciting products like DVDs, Ofrigam 50, like books, like the Emergency Questions books. Fist of Fun is still available there. And also, there should be some Trump cards. They're not Top Trumps. Get a card game that you could play with all my favourite guests in it. It's lots of fun for all the family. That should be there pretty soon if it's not there already. Anyway, let's sit back, relax, and enjoy Raha Lastapa with Bobby Mair. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Warwick Arts Centre. It wishes fucking Warwick my ass. Please welcome a man who is deeply regretting his winter choice of deciding to wear a big jumper during all of these shows. It's Richard Herring! Here I am for the first time. Look how thin I am. It's amazing. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Richard Herring's Lick, Spit, Tickle podcast. It's a new direction I'll take. There's so many podcasts now, you've got to find a new angle for each one. So now the format of this show is I'm going to lick the guest. If they don't like that, I'm going to spit on the guest. If they don't like that, I'm going to tickle the guest. I'm just trying to find out what their erogenous zones are. Just each. It's not a sexual thing, but I am trying to get them to orgasm by the end of the part. In a non-sexual way. It's just an exploratory thing. Though I was hanging out at Coventry Cathedral. Exactly. Well, we'll get onto that later. And the devil being stabbed by St. Michael on the front of it, he calls it Rahelastapa. So I don't know if that's... St. Michael still calls it Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. He's so uncool. Not cool like the devil. Well, exactly. Which one? There's three cathedrals in Coventry, but two of them are broken down and destroyed. I think, you know, if you've had two cathedrals destroyed, I don't think you should be allowed to have a third one. That should be the rule. To lose one cathedral is unfortunate. To lose two, don't mention the war. You know. But in a way, wouldn't it have been better if Hitler had taken out the whole of Coventry? Wouldn't it? Wouldn't it? But in a way, if Hitler could have seen... People often talk about going back in the past and killing baby Hitler. Maybe Hitler went forward in the future, saw what Coventry was going to be like, and... sadly, he failed to stop it. I very early memories of coming to Coventry Cathedral, some of my earliest memories, and of being terrified of it because of, A, that devil being stabbed by the Archangel Michael, whoever he is. I remember that vividly. And that massive fucking tapestry of Jesus. Crucified, or whatever he is. It's seared into my mind. A terrible thing. I've been looking up Coventry on Wikipedia. Coventry is the 7th most dangerous city in Europe. Do you know that? Yay! It comes ahead of Sarajevo, which is 9th. It's pretty impressive. Chuck Berry's My Ding-a-ling was recorded at the Locarno in Coventry, and that is the best thing that has ever happened here. A man singing a slightly, broadly euphemistically. Song about his penis. The Italian Job sewer scenes were filmed here. They're not in Turin as they are in the film. Because if you're going to film in a sewer, why not come to Coventry? I think that might be all I've got for you. I've literally been on holiday. I've been in Devon on holiday in Woolacombe, and I've cut the holiday short to come back here. I could still be there now to perform to you. I went home during the holiday to perform to people in London. Not really a holiday, that is it. But I've got 2 children, 4 and just nearly 2. And to be honest, getting away from that holiday is the most relaxing thing that's ever happened. It's been 2 weeks of fucking hell. Do not have children, I'm not even joking. Or only have them when they're like 15. Just have them, incubate them somewhere. Let them look after themselves. That's boarding school, isn't it? I'll just send them to boarding school. It'll be fine. So, look, we're going to crack straight on. My first guest, only guest this week. He's probably best known as the 3rd cousin of Justin Bieber. That is why you're all here tonight to see him. And you're going to be disappointed when you see him, madam. Don't get your hopes up. There is not much family resemblance. Ladies and gentlemen, will you please welcome Bobby Mair? Welcome. Come in, sit down, make yourself at home. You're quite a long way away.
Thank you.
I like it. They're keeping you a long way away.
Yes.
From me tonight. How are you doing, Bobby?
Yeah, I'm good.
Good. It's good to see you. So are you really the third? You're the cousin, 3rd cousin? What does that mean, 3rd cousin?
It means in my family, my grandfather's brother is Justin Bieber's great-grandfather.
Okay.
My grandma was Grandma Bieber, and her name has been soiled. Very badly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't tell people my grandmother's name without them laughing in my face.
I think they'd have laughed anyway. Bieber's quite a funny name. A, it sounds a bit like Beaver.
Yeah, that's true.
And B, it's Bieber, which is just a stupid name. If there wasn't Justin Bieber, he's actually made the name acceptable, I would say. Because we've now heard it. What's my Bieber? That's like a child's name for a fire engine.
What is this podcast? I've just signed on to have my dead grandmother mocked.
It's the roast of your dead grandmother. We brought her back to life.
Welcome to the roast of your dead grandmother.
So, Bobby, I've met you once before, very briefly. You don't remember it. We were in the offices.
No, I don't remember meeting you. I didn't know we had met.
Yeah. We met.
I think I probably know more about you than you've done research about me.
I know all sorts of things about you. Quite dark, and it's difficult to know where to start because they're all quite dark.
Can I just say,
yeah,
your train station guards in the Coventry train station are very aggressive. On the way here, I had a ticket on my phone, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I bought an e-ticket, but I dropped my phone on the ground, so the screen is slightly cracked, still very visible. On the way in London, they let me through, no problem. On the way out, I show the lady my ticket. She says, scan it. It won't scan. And then she says, you have to buy a new ticket because your phone screen is cracked.
Nice.
And I said, no, but they let me in. It's not fair to let someone in. I could have got the ticket another way. It's not fair to let someone in and then not let them out and demand they buy a new ticket. That seems like kidnapping and demanding a ransom. Like, they've now kidnapped me within these gates. So I said, bye-bye. And I just went through the gates and went about my way. And then a very large man, who's the bouncer of the train station. There's two of them, but this guy was really large and really excited. He was in his early 20s. And over, like, I don't know stone, but like 1,000 of them. Like, he was a really big man. Yeah. And he said, stop. I said, look, I have a ticket on my phone. But they said I have to buy a new ticket. I'm just going to go. He's like, no, you can't leave. And I said, I'm just going to leave. You're not a police officer. You're a train guard. What are you going to do? And I start to leave, and he shows me what he's going to do. He starts throwing me at the train barrier.
Wow.
Like, tossing me. And I said, stop. Stop doing this. And I'm trying to walk forward, and he's just throwing me. He's like, go through the barrier. Like, he's pushing me. And I said, you can't do this. And then this police officer ran over. And I've never been in a fight with someone. I've been very relieved to see a police officer. And I said, and then he started saying, this man has assaulted me. So I was now being accused of assault. And then I took off by one cop, and then there were two more cops, and they took off the security guards. And I was like, I'm going to be charged with assault in Coventry. I'm now the scum of Coventry. And I thought, oh no, I was so excited to do this podcast. I thought, I'm not going to make the podcast. I was like, am I allowed to take his picture? She's like, technically you are allowed to take his picture. And then and he's saying I assaulted him, but I didn't assault him. He assaulted me. He threw me at the barrier. And I had a ticket on my phone. And then eventually we talked for 10 minutes. I calmed down. The guy calmed down. I shook his hand. They realized I was a comedian. I think they didn't want me to shame him on social media. And they didn't charge me with assault. And I'm very grateful.
Wow. It's the seventh most dangerous city in Europe. Do you know? I should have told you that before you came here. Couldn't you just email the ticket to their phone so they could have then scanned the ticket on there?
I had that thought, yeah. But she looked so angry, I just wanted to get out of there.
Yeah.
And it didn't work out for
me at
all.
Well, I'm very sorry that that you had this terrible treatment.
I probably could have tried to barter more before I went through the gates.
Yeah.
That was my mistake.
That's why they call this the Warwick Arts Centre, though. They're trying to distance themselves. But, you know, they're literally distancing themselves from Warwick. If you look at a map, it's Coventry. Yeah, no. We're in Coventry. But My Ding-a-Ling was... Did you like the song My Ding-a-Ling by Chuck Berry?
I don't know a lot of Chuck Berry's music. I know he's a very influential artist.
Yeah, not really with My Ding-a-Ling.
Okay.
My Ding-a-Ling. We can do it tonight with the audience. He goes, My Ding-a-Ling, My Ding-a-Ling, I want you to play with My Ding-a-Ling. That's the Chuck Berry song. I think it's one of his most successful.
I just didn't know anyone wrote it.
And then...
You know what I mean? There's some songs that are so shitty, you just assume, like... I mean, I think this song was just created by children.
Yeah, well, it sounds like, you know, one of those sort of 70s comedians that used to do just swearing. Kevin Bloody Wilson. That's an insult to Kevin Bloody Wilson because his stuff's actually much more classy than that. His cock-based material is on a different level to that. But then there's a load of Coventry people who shout, "Bye, ding-a-ling!" Well, not like that. I can't do the accent. It's one of the accents I can't do. It's weird.
I feel like there's a lot of people in here who could do the Coventry accent better than you.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't think any of these people are from Coventry. They've all come from Warwick. Leamington Spa. You've cancelled the Edinburgh show that you were going to do.
I was going to do the Edinburgh Festival.
Yeah.
Sadly, some work came up that I can't talk about.
I mean, it's not sadly, is it? Because you'd have gone to Edinburgh and lost £10,000, and you were going to do a job where presumably they'll pay you some money. So it's a win for you.
Well, yeah, you framed it in a better way.
You didn't even have to go to Edinburgh to get the work. That's people are going to Edinburgh to hope to get the work that will pay for their terrible Edinburgh experience.
Yeah.
I am going to Edinburgh. Do come along. My house, I've got a family house, like three bedrooms. £7,000 for the month it's costing.
Oh, my God.
And I can't even, you know, my kids aren't even doing a show, so I can't even get any... I could say, well, that's £2,000 for each of you.
You cast in a play or something.
I could try. So please come to the Edinburgh Fringe. It's no good me saying this on the podcast because it's fucking October if you're listening to this at home. Please travel back in time. Travel back in time, destroy Coventry efficiently, then come a bit further forward in time.
I'll be deported by the time this gets up for assaulting a security guard at a train station.
I think they're probably just suspicious of why anyone was coming to Coventry. You're probably the first person willingly coming to Coventry. All right, that's enough having a go at Coventry. It's a nice place. Don't know if I've ever been in. Warwick Arts Centre's the closest I've got to going into the heart of Coventry, I think.
I used to do a show at the Showcase Cinema in Coventry. And the audience was so horrible, I just went one by one and insulted them. And that was the show, just going around one by one and saying what I didn't like about each person, and then I left.
That's good. We could try it tonight.
There's too many. I think they could take us.
So, you are from Canada. Let's get that out of the way.
Yes.
Before people are confused by your accent.
Yes.
I'm interested in a few things before you came to the UK.
Okay.
Did you genuinely do medical experiments?
Oh, yeah, I was a medical lab rat. That's how I made my living for like a year and a half.
Right.
So, you guys have heard about medical studies, have you?
Yep.
Okay, so yeah. So, I go in for a weekend. They give me a pill, take my blood, and then you'd sleep in bunk beds with a bunch of strangers.
Right.
And I was in my early 20s, and I was doing stand-up, and it was the only way I could... Two weekends a month, I'd make $1,000. At the time, I could live for a month on $1,000.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the month, I did stand-up.
Right.
And I remember once I did one, and it was... I was really excited because it was for methadone. Now, on my own, I would never try... Actually, that's not true at all. I never came across heroin, but I definitely would have done it. But I hadn't done it at that point, so I was like, okay, so you're going to get... And it paid like $4,000, so I was like, I'm going to get all this money, great.
Yep.
And then the morning we were supposed to be dosed, they took my heart rate, and it was too low. I just wasn't taking care of myself at all.
Yeah.
And then I went in the bathroom. You had to get your heart rate up or you didn't get the drug and didn't get paid. So I did some push-ups.
Right.
They took my heart rate again. It was too low. And then they told me to leave. Do you know how sad it is to find out you're not healthy enough to do fake heroin? Like, that is a pathetic day.
Yeah. Were you not concerned about the side? Because you read all these stories about people turning in, you know... Inside out or whatever.
Oh, well, so I would always do, other than that methadone story, I always did ones that were like a cholesterol medication.
Okay.
Or a light painkiller. And what they'd usually be, it would be a drug that was on the market, and then they're trying to get a generic version of that drug approved. So they're just making sure that the drug's metabolized at the same rate. So there are like stage one trials where they've never tested them on people. They pay very well, but they're very dangerous. I never did those. But... I once had a one-night stand and with this lady, and she was very broke. And my parting gift to her was telling her to do medical studies.
Yeah.
And then I didn't see her again. Like, we just met, and it was a nice time. And then a couple months later, I ran into a mutual friend who we had met through, and she said, I want to talk about what happened to Susie, because she was a journalist. And I was like, oh, what happened to Susie? So, yeah, she did a medical study. And she, there's ones that are just dangerous. There's ones where they're like, listen, we're going to give you epilepsy medication, get you drunk and see what happens. And I don't know if she did one of those, but she did something. Her heart stopped. They brought her back to life, though! She was okay. They brought her back to life. She didn't die.
I mean, it would be like having a murderer on the show.
I know.
Essentially, if you go, and she's dead. And I killed
also, her. My interaction with her was after our one-night stand, I bought the morning after pill. Well, we went half on it because I had bought dinner. I wasn't going to pay for the whole pill. But... So I eliminated our unborn child and then... Almost killed her, also.
Okay, so you are a murderer. I am. 50 murderer.
Yeah.
That's good. Well, I mean, no, there wasn't definitely a child in there.
There wasn't definitely a child, but...
But you ensured that that
I
was the case.
I ensured that there was not. Also, I weirdly, to tie it up all up, on the walk to get the morning after pill, me and her were looking for a pharmacy, and we walked into a methadone clinic.
Right.
And we saw what our future child would have looked like, and then we went to the pharmacy.
Your humor's quite dark, Bobby.
I
probably should have said that.
I'm sorry.
At the start. No, it's good.
But I don't mean to be, like, I'm just me.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not,
well,
I'm,
I'm your not life trying is, to be.
Your life's quite... I mean, your Edinburgh show was going to be... The tagline was survived adoption, both his mums dying, mental breakdowns, and getting diagnosed with borderline personality disorder. So that was... That's the tagline of your...
Yeah, but I'm having a good day today.
So you've got that proper comedian's backstory that, like, you know, the...
Yeah, definitely. I have a lot of... Yeah, lots of sad shit. Yeah. Wah-wah, cry violin, whatever, yeah.
And go with it through humour. I was reading Robin Ince's book about I'm a Joke and So Are You, I think it's called. It's a very good book about the about comedy and what makes a comedian. And he was saying about how many comedians, a lot of comedians are adopted or have some big trauma with their parents
yeah.
in childhood. I don't think, I mean, my dad was my headmaster, which maybe is my trauma.
Just feeling constant shame yeah, your whole yeah. childhood. Oh, yeah, that's horrible.
Yeah, but I feel like I had quite a happy childhood. But a lot of comedians have this, you know, they've lost a parent or they've or been adopted. You've lost two mothers and
yes.
and been adopted.
Yes.
So do you think that has turned you into a comedian, or do you think you'd have been a comedian?
I don't know. It's I don't know what why I'm a comedian. You know, lots of people have really sad lives and don't become comedians. It's not like you can punch a kid in the face and be like, someday you'll thank me for this when you're selling out Wembley Stadium.
But if you punch enough of them, one of them will
yeah,
do.
Yeah.
I'm taking 10%.
Yeah.
I mean, that's sort of like being a child abuse pimp, isn't it? If you punch enough kids.
Well, I always think the same thing. Like, whenever you see a really old man with a really young lady, it's kind of, you know, her dad didn't treat her well, right? But then you think, all the bad dads are treating their daughter shitty, and then other bad dads are getting to fuck those people's daughters. That doesn't seem fair. You know how you said if I didn't want something to be included in the yeah. podcast?
And I said there was no way you would possibly have said anything having watched your stand-up. That was a very good observation.
Thank you.
Staying in... My wife's only 13 years younger than me, and she gets on very well with her dad. So it's fine.
Are you sure about that?
what brought you to... So you're in Toronto. Toronto? What's Toronto like?
So Toronto is a beautiful city. Yeah, it's like Sweden in the past.
Oh, yeah, that's nice. Yeah.
You know? I moved there when I was 19 because I wanted to do comedy, so I went to Humber College's Comedy Writing and Performance Program.
Okay.
And then that was really boring, so I dropped out.
Have they produced any big names, Humber College?
Within Canada, yeah. Lots of people who are doing really well have went there.
Okay.
But, I mean, yeah. And then I just did comedy in Toronto for 6 years, and I came here.
Yeah.
Toronto itself is a great city. I liked my time there. But, like, I don't know. It's just... What do you want to know?
I just want to, you know, I don't... I've only heard of Toronto as a place. I've never, you know, I can't even imagine what it's like at all. So I was just wondering... tell me what it's like.
I think you could imagine
it. I can't. There's a lot of people going, talking in a Canadian... Is there French people there?
No, there's no French people ones. In Toronto. Well, there's probably some. I'm not saying we haven't killed them all. We killed all the French. No, the French people usually live in Quebec. Toronto is an Anglophone city, English city.
Yeah.
Anglophone, is that a word?
That's all I wanted to know. I just wanted to know whether it's Anglophone or not.
Okay.
I just said that.
It's an Anglophone city.
I went to Montreal. I've been to Montreal, which is also in Canada, and I've heard of it.
It's the best city in the world.
That's got a lot. They've got French people there, and when they've got KFC, they call it PFC. Or something like that, don't they? PFK or something, because it's got to be in French.
Yeah.
Everywhere in the world calls KFC KFC.
Well, they have strict language laws.
They do.
They hate the English language, and they want to keep speaking French.
Yeah.
And it is the thing they care about most.
But even in France, KFC is called KFC.
I mean...
So it's not actually French for them to call it PFK or whatever they're calling it. Puilo.
If you shot a man in the face in Quebec and said, I just shot that man in the face, they'd say, did you... just say that in English. Like, they're obsessed. They never stop.
Yeah. So what brought you to Great Britain?
I wanted to... Canada has a very small comedy scene. Not very small. There's lots of great comedians in Canada. But it's a gigantic country.
that's like the size of Russia with only 30 million people, or maybe 40 million now. So all the gigs are very far apart. No one's that interested in comedy. It's like trying to be a blues musician in Belgium. Like, no one cares. They just don't care. It's not that they hate comedy, but most towns wouldn't have a show. Only the cities. So there's just, I was just felt like, and I saw all the kind of comedians like me who had been going 10 years longer than me were sad and angry. And I thought, well, I'm sad and angry now, but I don't want to be that way when I'm old. So I got out.
Yeah.
And why here? Yeah. Well, there was a great visa called the Holidaymaker Visa. That's an under 30 travel visa that I was eligible for. And I could not get a visa to the United States. So that was why I came here.
Well, it's
here.
Much easier to travel around the United Kingdom. The towns are quite close together.
No, this, what I don't think what anyone appreciates who does, who started comedy here and who is from here, is that this is the best place in the world to do comedy.
Right.
I have friends who live in America. There's nowhere else where you can be, like, I'm well enough known to be on this podcast, but, like, for the first few years here, nobody knew who I was at all, and I was still making a nice living. There's nowhere else where you can just make a nice living in complete anonymity and comedy.
I've been going for 30 years, and I've managed to do so. It's pretty lucky. We get a lot of crazy Canadian comedians over here, and like nearly all the Canadians who come over are basically insane drug addicts. Some of them clean themselves up.
Okay.
Nearly all of them are mad. Are you the ones who've just been thrown out of Canada for being too crazy, or is that what all comedians are like in Canada?
I think a lot of comedians party pretty hard in Canada. Yeah. More than, I would comfortably say more than here, because here, it's like a business, you know?
Yeah.
You're doing your show, you're going to go home, you're filming it, you're recording it. A lot's happening. In Canada, you do your show, you think, well, no one's ever going to remember that happened. And then you get really high and you fall asleep, you know? People don't have things to do. There's not shit to do.
No. Okay. We get a lot of weird ones from Canada, that's what I'm saying. I've had some of them on this.
No, I agree. Who you
Tony Lord, yay. Like, even when he's sober, he's fucking nuts. He's sober. You think he's drunker than he was when he was drunk?
Yeah, Tony has a lot of energy within him.
Yeah, he does. He's a great guy. Craig Campbell, insane. Lovely guy, insane.
Yeah.
Mike McShane, he's all right. Is he Canadian?
Wait, who's Mike McShane?
From whose line is it anyway?
I'm not aware of the improvise.
No. Is he Canadian?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
Well,
got Wikipedia back there. Okay, Jim Carrey.
Yeah, Jim Carrey.
He's nuts.
Did he come here to do comedy? No. I don't know that. Jim Carrey.
I'm just naming William Shatner. I'm just naming Canadians now.
You know, William Shatner was living in his car in his mid-40s after the Star Trek TV series had went out.
Oh, yeah.
And he was living in his car in the Hollywood Hills and had no money. He was completely bankrupt. And then he had a complete resurgence.
He did. And now he's like one of the richest men in the world because he got shares in something nuts, didn't he? William Shatner shares? Look it up. He got shares in... He's got like about $70 billion or something now because he had...
I don't know about that number.
He had shares in Apple or something like that. He had 200% of the shares in Apple.
After you've been rich and then 200%. Yeah.
From what, adverts? Priceline adverts. $600 million. Yeah. $600 million from Priceline adverts.
Yeah, that he really... That's a homeless success story.
That's gone pretty well.
That's like if there was like a group of homeless people who like met up to be like, how's it been since you were homeless? I think he'd really shame them.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's been okay. You know, I have a one bedroom place. I have my daughter and my son with me. It's a bit cramped, but it's a lot better than it was. What about you? Oh yeah, I'm worth $1 billion, and I'm. Yeah, people love me.
But he was very successful. Like before, he's in the Twilight Zone twice. He's in two episodes of the Twilight Zone.
That was in the 80s, right?
No, in the 60s.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, so before Star Trek.
Oh, I didn't know.
He's in two very, very good episodes of the Twilight Zone. He's in the one with the gremlins on the airplane, which is one of the most famous ones. And he's in the one with the machine that you put the penny in, the dot that's scented, and then it tells you your future, which that you can buy as a toy. So he was big news.
And then homeless.
It's interesting. And then homeless. Well, he had a car. It's not bad.
Yeah.
The other homeless people looked up to him. He's got a car.
Yeah.
He's got a house that can move.
A house that can move.
People with houses would look at him going, why didn't I think of that? Yeah. What did he do with all his Star Trek millions?
I don't know. He blew them. Yeah. That was before the movies. So it was before the movies, after the TV show.
Yeah.
And I guess you do two seasons. How many seasons?
It was only, I think it was two series of Star Trek.
Yeah, two seasons of network television in the 60s. You know, you blew the money.
Yeah. What a prick. Tried to get him on here. He was in the country. I tried to get him on here, but then his manager got straight back to me, but said he doesn't do podcasts. Idiot. What if he'd gone to Rod Serling? I don't do Twilight Zones.
Yeah. All right, if you get offered a part in Star Trek, are you going to say no?
I'm going to say no, not if Shatner's in it. Is Shatner in it? Fuck him. You'll have to ring me up and beg me. No, I'd absolutely do any acting job. This week I've been offered two acting jobs, right? I don't know what level these acting. They're both in horror films.
Okay.
One is a horror film about someone dressed as a panda attacking people, and one's a horror film about sort of badgers attacking people. And I haven't read the scripts yet. That's weird, isn't it?
Are
two black
scripts
and white animals. Do you think there's some kind of bet on going, who can get Richard Herring in the most weird
horror film? It really does feel like someone's pranking you. Like one of your friends has written a fake movie.
Yeah. Look, because I'm wearing this as well. Could be this. Let's try and get him in a horror film. He's got the clothing.
You get
zebra could be a zebra. We could name other black and white animals, can't we? I reckon we could keep this going for about 90 seconds.
A giraffe.
Skunk. A giraffe doesn't count. Skunk is a very good one.
A giraffe if you painted it.
A giraffe if you painted it. A quagga, which is...
I don't know what that is.
Made up.
No, it's an extinct form of zebra.
I didn't know we had another guest on the podcast. It's a man sitting in the front who just is wanting to be a part of it.
That's it. That's the only ones, though.
Penguin.
No. That wouldn't work. That wouldn't work. A penguin in a film, that wouldn't work, mate. So, going all right, isn't it?
This could be worse.
It could be, no.
It could have been 20 minutes of silence. trying to talk about my feelings.
We'll get on to that. So, we'll ask you an emergency question because we've done some backstage and you were lots of fun. And then I'm going to ask you some other stuff. I'm going to get on to the serious stuff later. These are emergency questions for children.
Did you write this book?
I did. I mean, you can say, I mean, write. I did technically write the stuff down.
Okay. Why would people get the... if you were going to... No, not why, but if you were going to buy the... That's not what I mean. That's not what I mean. I mean, they're emergency questions. Like, what's the pitch of, like, when you need them?
Well, because people...
To start conversations.
Get conversation stuff. Oh! You can play it at home.
That's what I'm saying.
And you can set up your own podcast at home in your basement and pretend you're me and ask your toys about questions.
I'd do that.
For example, or there's some for dates.
I think we look similar.
Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we have similar hair. My hairline's a bit farther back, which isn't bode well because I'm younger, but I think we have a similar energy.
There's a similar energy. Yeah, we could play, you know, I could be your dad in something.
Well, I don't know who my dad is, so who knows? You could play my dad in my life.
How are you, 32?
I'm 33.
33. I'm nearly 52.
Did you have sex with any prostitutes in the mid-80s?
I mean, I didn't really have sex in the mid-80s.
Yeah, you didn't do that.
The first time I had sex was in 1987. I was nearly 20 years old.
I was born in 1986.
So I'm not your dad. Although, I spunked up a lot before then. It's possible... It's possible your mother came to Cheddar, scraped some sperm off my bed sheets. It's possible, that's what I'm saying. It's not out of the realms. If the universe is infinite, there's a universe where that happened, where your mum... But I'm going to travel to Cheddar, see if I can find a repulsive...
Teenager's cum nest. I need this cum.
So your real mum who's now dead.
Biological mum.
Yeah, your real mum. Doesn't matter, both dead.
I feel like it's insulting.
I don't have to spare the feelings of the other dead one. She's dead.
No, they're my feelings.
I don't care about you.
No, it's my feelings. Not theirs.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Your biological mother.
Biological mother dead.
Yeah, and was a prostitute.
I don't. Well, she was a. Okay, when I got my adoption papers, my mom was in care, so there was like a mini biography of her, and in the papers, they were trying to put a positive spin on her occupation. So it said, Bobby's mother was a dancer in nightclubs, which led her to being in a number of communities. But it's like, if they're telling me she was a stripper, I feel like she's probably a prostitute.
Well, that's a big leap to make, and I think you've been very offensive to your own... your own real
mom. I mean, I'm not sure.
Okay, let's ask you an emergency question. We need one now.
You just said, dead mom, dead mom.
I need...
emergency question.
I need to get out of the hole I've dug myself.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Okay, I'll ask you this one.
Okay.
If, like Adam Sandler in The Cobbler, you had the power to transform yourself into any person with the same size feet as you by wearing their shoes that you've cobbled on the magic machine, in case you haven't seen the film... which person with the same size feet as you would you become? It can be anyone with the same size feet as you. What size feet have you got?
10.
Oh, you can't be me.
Okay, well,
that suggests I'm not your father.
But who... how do I know who has the same size feet
as me? Well, I thought you would have researched that before you came on the show.
How is that a conversation starter when it's always going to lead to the next thing that is said, which is, I don't know who has the same size feet as me. That's never a thing that's historically spoken about. No, I don't... what size were Hitler's feet?
Probably 10. Do you want to be Hitler? Who's got size 10 feet in here? Cheer now. Hey. Fucking nearly everyone. I've got size 8, so you can't be me. My wife has size 8, so I'm going to be my wife.
You can wear her shoes.
Yeah, okay, I can wear her shoes, which is great. So, like, if I just have to go outside, I just put on her, like, boots and stuff.
Yeah.
Or, like, her little sandals. And, yeah, it feels nice on my feet.
Yeah. I like women's jeans. They hug my body nice.
Have you seen The Cobbler with Adam Sandler?
I've never seen that great film.
No, you should watch it.
There's
a new one out called, which isn't new to people at home, Murder, Mystery, something. 30 million people watched it in the first weekend on Netflix.
People love Adam Sandler.
They do.
Yeah. I love Adam Sandler. You ever see Punch Drunk Love?
I do, yeah, but that's why I'm interested in Adam Sandler.
He's a great actor.
He's really good.
He doesn't write films that I love, but I think he's incredible.
He's a good actor. He's a good comedian. His stand-up special's really good.
Great.
Why does he do The Cobbler? What's going on?
I think he just likes doing family entertainment.
Why would you do... and I do a couple of them.
But you're about to audition for a horror movie.
Hey, I'm not auditioning. I've been offered the part.
Oh, okay. But I think that's the answer of the why. Is like, I don't have any, you know... you just do what comes in front of you.
Would
right?
you do The Cobbler if The Cobbler came to you? The guy said, you play a guy, he's got a magic cobbler machine. He can transform into anyone who's got the same size feet as him. Would you not go, well, is that going to limit it a bit?
I don't know. It depends. What is the number on the table?
It'd be a lot.
Yeah.
If you were out, you'd have to be Adam Sandler.
I'd trade lives with Adam Sandler happily.
Yeah?
Yeah, he seems like he has a great life. He just makes movies with his friends in them.
I know, I like him.
I'm just saying that would be a great time. I think that's why he makes those movies. If I don't know Adam Sandler, but I assume it's because it's a great time to make those movies and they make him a lot of money.
Yeah.
And he thinks they're funny.
I don't think he does.
I don't know.
I just get the sense that there's, you know, there's more to Adam Sandler. I mean, you know, you're not that interested in him, but I'm very interested in him. So I don't think
I even loved him in Spanglish.
Oh, did you?
I think it's a flawed film, but I thought he was a very sympathetic character.
Okay. I haven't, don't think I've seen that one.
Well,
I can't really talk until I've seen Spanglish.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the new one yet, so, you know, it might be a return to form.
The one with him and Drew Barrymore?
No, it's him and Jennifer Aniston.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, he's done some with 50 First Dates.
Oh, yeah. That'd be a lot.
So, we'll talk about you. We'll talk about you being a married man. You did a show, you did a film, a TV show, rather, about getting married with your actual fiancé, who then is your actual wife, Harriet Kelmsley.
Yes.
How much was it scripted and how much was it the real
thing
that was
going on? So, we did it kind of the... I'm not comparing our show to Curb Your Enthusiasm, but in the style that they write Curb Your Enthusiasm. So we write like the story of what we wanted to happen, and then we write what happens in each scene, and then we just run a scene like 10 times,
yeah,
and then film it from a bunch of different angles and take the best parts.
Based on stuff that's happened to you already, or just...
Oh, yeah, like it was... It was about us planning our wedding.
Yeah.
And the tension between us, you know, will they, won't they manage to get married? And I would say, if anything, it was a sanitized version of our real life.
Yeah. Well, she's...
If you'd seen the show, clearly some of it hadn't happened.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
It's definitely based on things that we had happened or things we had... Yeah.
I mean, you're quite an unusual couple. A, like, it's a very bad idea for comedians to marry each other. And as I, you know, I'm further in than you.
Yeah.
you have very different backgrounds. She's a quite, I don't know if she really is, but within the film, she's a kind of upper middle class.
Oh, she is. Yeah. I married well.
Yeah, you did. And she married badly.
She married terribly. Yeah. She's brought nothing to her family. she's just diminishing the family wealth.
Yeah.
Not that there's like that. She's from like a middle class family. I'm not.
No.
But yeah.
But it's, you know, that's an interesting dynamic. I just wondered if that was how genuine that was. Because you've done roast battles against each other as well.
Yeah, we did.
We watched a bit of yours, me and my wife together, and there's no way I could do that. I mean, I say things on here when she's not here that I hope she won't hear, but sometimes it gets back to her. But I couldn't say the things to her face that you would say to
it your... felt amazing.
Yeah. But was it worth it? Because if I did that to my wife on stage, I would pay for it later.
Oh no, we wrote it together. You know, yeah. we tried to, like, it was more like it's kind of like professional wrestling. It was great.
I know. I get that the roast battle is mates having fun with each other. Usually, not usually married people. They asked me to go on it with Stuart Lee. Which, you know, I'd kind of like to, but A, I know he wouldn't do, but B, it would just be me going, cunt, 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 cunt. So, which I think would be quite a good way of coping with it, wouldn't it? They just said, yeah, no, fine, but now let's do, no, cunt, 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 cunt.
Yeah, well, I think you have to like the person.
Yeah, yeah, I do, kind of. I like the character of Stuart Lee.
See, I don't know Stuart Lee, and I know he's your... I don't know what's happening. So I'm not going to
say
anything.
He's my former double up. So it's the same, but it's a different... No.
He's your ex-wife, pretty much. Yeah. What you're saying. Okay.
Yeah. So when you know someone that well, it's kind of... Because even if you're joking, you both agree this is what we'll do, something might just get under...
Yeah.
...in there and... ignite something, and then if you go, you know, I don't have to go home with Stuart Lee after the show and have sex with him or not have sex with him.
Yeah, we're not. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I any I like working with my wife. Yeah. It's great. We have, yeah.
She's excellent as well. Very, very funny.
She's very funny. We didn't plan on being an improv double act, you know? It wasn't our plan.
So did you just meet on the circuit?
Yeah, we met at a house party like 7 years ago. Yeah. I had met her twice before that, but I don't remember meeting her. It's like a kind of a theme in my life, I guess, not remembering things.
Yeah.
But and then the third time she made more of an impression, so I remembered her.
Okay.
And then she had sex with someone else that day, okay. And then we went on a date like a week later.
Okay.
I don't know. Telling the story of how you met your wife, I don't. We fucked for a while, and then we thought, what if we only fucked each other? And then we only fucked each other, and then we fought a lot, and now we're here.
I think it's just that. I mean, it interests me in getting comedy from that any situation because I write. You write as a comedian. You write about your real life,
of course,
to a great extent. Both of us and most comedians do that. And so it's mining that family stuff and the relationship stuff, which, you know, it's an interesting line to tread. And it sort of just depends on how your relationship with the other, you know, whether your relationship is that kind of relationship where you can, which clearly yours is, where you can do that. Mine is to the extent that my wife puts up with me saying stuff on here most of the time.
Does she ever publicly attack you?
No, she's pretty nice on the whole. A little bit. I think she did say she does a podcast called Drunk Women Solving Crime, which is very good. And I think she did imply she wanted to murder me on one of those and had an idea of how to do it. Slightly shitting me up because...
Like in the
you
house?
Know, when you're 7 or 8 years in, you know, we've got life assurance for about another 5 or 6 years. She's got to get rid of me quite soon. If she wants the pay. Are you insured? Have you got your life insurance against each other? See, yeah, there's nothing. You're safe. I look at my wife and I think £600,000 there.
I really worry about that because Harriet has dyspraxia and she's very clumsy. And one night she was really drunk and I was helping her vomit in a bathtub. And she kept falling over and hitting her head on a radiator repeatedly, and I was like, you have to stop hitting your head on this fucking radiator, because if you die, no one's gonna believe you hit your own head against the radiator. And I was saying it yelling, so I'm like, the neighbors just heard me yell. If you now die, you're just ruining my fucking life.
Yeah.
Got
to watch out for it. It's difficult. You know, the chances are...
How does your wife want to kill you?
I'm not coming... I haven't actually listened to this episode. Okay. I saw some tweets about it. She said, oh, yeah, it's nothing.
That's what they would
say,
isn't it?
The tweets were concerning.
Are you allergic to anything?
No, I don't think so. But, you know, I'm quite old. If I died of a heart attack, no one would be that surprised.
Yeah. She could just put a little cocaine in your food every day and just slowly wear your heart down.
Yeah.
That'd be a way to go about it. Then she'd know, okay.
I don't really want to give her more ideas. She's already got some ideas how to do it. I mean, I don't really, she'd get away with it. I don't mind, because I don't want my kids to grow up with a dead dad and a mother in prison. So if she kills me, I want her to get away with it.
I think if she killed you in a way that wasn't too suspicious, no one would be, like, super surprised you were dead. I don't know. In the same way, if I died, no one would be surprised.
No.
No one would be like, he was too young. They'd be like, he lasted way longer than I thought he would.
So you've given up drugs and drink. You're into drugs and drinking.
Yeah, I used to do coke and drink and smoke weed. Not every day. Once, twice, three times a week. And I was really bad at it. Some people do a lot of drugs, and then they're like really fun versions of themselves. Yeah, I just never did that. Everyone would just hate me and be really mad at me.
Yeah.
And then I'd say, oh, I'm sorry, I won't do it again. But I want to do it again.
But it's that kind of... I mean, a lot of comedians have this. And we were talking about backstage, you know, that it's a normal situation. Comedians are taking drugs, and comedians are definitely drinking.
Oh, yeah.
And it's normal, and you could look at another comedian and go, see, I don't drink that much, that guy.
Yeah, there's always... That's the thing with comedy. like when I quit, a lot of comedians be like, I mean, I don't think you had a problem. It's like, no, no, you just have a bigger problem than I have. That doesn't mean I don't have a problem. I just didn't like who I was when I got drunk. Yeah. That's it, really. It's not, there's not like, I don't like think about it all the time. I'm not like, some people are like, oh, do you have trouble when you're at a show? I'm like, no, I'm not sitting there being like, oh no, the old drink is trying to get me. Just like, oh yeah, I don't drink. And yeah. I don't really miss it.
Do you think it... I saw you did a stand-up special in Canada.
Yes.
Just before you came out here, which is on YouTube.
It is on YouTube.
It's a really good... I mean, you look quite different.
I have... weird. I did... That's not how I looked all the time then, but that day they straightened my hair.
Yeah.
So I had long, straightened hair and I looked like a lady.
No beard. You're a very handsome man.
Thank you very much.
Maybe you do look like me after all.
I think so.
And... What I quite like about it is it looks like, you told me it's like 2011 or something you filmed that in. Just the way it's shot and put together, like the opening titles are very like 1990s, I would say.
Yeah, it was called Comedy Now.
Yeah.
It was a lot of Canadian comedians did it. Actually, Russell Peters, who's one of the biggest comedians in the world now, his Comedy Now is what blew him up.
Right.
Yeah.
But you're very, you know, you look very a lot younger, but you're only 8 years younger, so you're still, you know, you're in your mid-20s. But it's very confident. You're 6 years into your stand-up career.
Yeah, about that point.
It's very confident. It's a very good special, like 30 minutes or so, isn't it?
Thank you. Yeah. Well, I couldn't... I had moved here, actually, when I filmed it. Mm. So I moved here, and then they offered it to me, so I got to fly back
right
to the city that gave me nothing, film a special, and leave. It felt great. Also, right before I left Canada, I won a comedy competition where I won $10,000.
Right.
And I'd planned to move here forever, but then when I got here... I just told people, I just won $10,000 and decide to move here on a whim. And people love that story. Like, I don't think I'd be sitting here right now if I hadn't told that lie. People just really bought into that story. And they're like, wow, you just decided to move here on a whim? I was like, yeah. I just always heard how great England is. That's what everyone says.
Good. Well, you've blown the line now, so this goes out.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the Julian Assange thing this year. Was it this year or last year?
No, that was when Trump and Hillary were running.
Oh, was it back then?
So that was like two and a half years ago.
So he was in the embassy and you were shouting because he didn't have the internet.
Well, I thought it'd be funny. So Assange, they cut off his Wi-Fi. With, you know, that seems a bit mean because that's how he communicates, it through the internet.
Yeah.
So then I decided to go there and print off the internet and read it to him through a megaphone. And the internet's a very big place. So when you're trying to pick which part of the internet to read to someone, it's really hard. So I read him like the weather from his hometown. I remember some celebrity had just been acquitted of a rape charge and he was up on a rape charge. I talked about that.
Did he get in touch with you afterwards?
Didn't even look out the window. So when they got him out of that embassy, I thought, you know what, Julian? I won't be doing that again for you. I won't be coming up to his prison window and reading him any news.
Julian Assange. A lot of people send me photos of people who look like me and claim they look like me. I keep seeing pictures of Julian Assange on the BBC front page and think, that's me. I think I really look like Julian Assange. His face, when I catch it, I go, oh, it's me. So... If anyone's watching, doing a film about Julian Assange, I can smear my own shit on a wall. I can fail to clean up after my own cat.
I think you could nail it.
Yeah. I mean, it's only acting as well, right? You don't actually have to do the things he did. Just realised that's lucky. they're more weirded out by me than you. This is... you're doing well. I'm being more offensive than you. I didn't expect that to happen. I like the... Was this in your special, the idea of vegetarians owning a cat? That was a nice idea, that they were... You wouldn't eat animals, but you would kidnap them and keep them in prison.
Yeah, that seems mean.
The special? Yeah.
No, I don't remember the specifics of the bit, but I remember... It just, you know your animal doesn't actually want to be there because if you ever leave a door open, it sprints for the door with an urgency. Yeah. And then you just slam the door and say, oh, you love me. And then in the joke, I think I said, it doesn't love you. It has Stockholm Syndrome. Like,
yeah. I mean, it's very much the same as children in reverse. Having children, you sort of feel like you love them, but then you realise they've just wound you down and made you believe that by keeping you locked in an apartment in Willicombe. So glad to be out. But that's why I like. There's a lot of, in your routines, there's lots of these just nice ways of looking at things. There's that, there's talking about going to festivals not on drugs, because it's Glastonbury this weekend, recording this and saying that's like just being a refugee, is to be playing music. And these nice kind of ideas. It's really nice. It's very, very worth looking at stuff up. And you've opened for a few comedians who are quite racy comedians. You opened for Jerry Sadovitz.
I opened for Jerry on a national tour when I first moved here. Right. Like 2 months after I moved here, I opened for Jerry on like a 20 city tour.
And how was that? Because I supported Jerry.
Did you?
In 1989 or 1990, something like a couple of gigs I did. I was his support act on the Comedy Network.
Jerry's a really positive, cheery guy.
Yeah.
No, Jerry's great. I mean, that was amazing. Because of him, I got to play, like, insane venues. We were playing, like, I don't know, just, like, theaters like this.
Yeah.
And I just moved here, so some kid from Canada.
But he's an astonishing comedian. But, you know, you've worked with Doug Stanhope again, who's a similar,
yeah,
you know,
similar
vein. I mean, and your stuff is that pushing the boundaries of taste. With Jerry, I mean, it's like being run over. I go and see him, and I love that kind of comedy. But even I come out going, oh, my God, I can't believe he said that thing.
Yeah.
But it's sort of like theatre rather, you know, it's like you'd go to a play and see someone murder some children. You go, oh, my God, I can't believe they murdered those children.
No, exactly.
You know, he absolutely goes for everybody, and he says things that will offend but you can't really complain because you've enjoyed the rest of the
stuff. Yeah, he goes for everyone, yeah.
And it's that visceral experience. But do you think comedy is being led away from that? Do you think that there's any danger of that kind of comedy going so out of vogue? Do you think people, you know, the people complaining about jokes is going to pull that stuff down?
I don't know. It's hard to know.
Yeah.
I think right now we're in it's just a very polarized time. You're either on the left or you're on the right. It's very polarized. And I think once politics calms down, everyone else will calm down. I think it'll all be okay.
I mean, I think it's always a pendulum with these things, I think, you know, politics and comedy, in that things get too safe and then people want...
Exactly.
And then things get too extreme. And they did, like, you know, 5 or 10 years ago, I think probably things were getting a bit pushed too far. And then, you know, there's a natural pulling back in that. But it does, it sort of, I suppose, someone like Jerry Sadovitz is a very good example, someone who's made a career of doing that. And it doesn't matter if someone tweets, I saw Jerry Sadovitz and he said something that offended me about every single thing he says, it's not going to affect his
no,
life.
I don't think so.
Because, you know, but someone like you, say, who's a young comedian who might get a TV job or something.
Yeah.
And you might have a nice job on a nice TV show and someone might go, oh, but Bobby did this terrible joke about killing his children with the morning after pill. That'd be 40 million and one people in Canada if only you'd let that one live. So, you know, it can affect down the line.
Yeah, but since I haven't had it happen yet, I just don't want to think about it. You know, I don't know. Who has lost work definitively because...
I mean, it's sort of recently Jimmy Carr's been in trouble again, but it always brushes off Jimmy. No, it doesn't. No, he does. But he knows it goes away. There are definitely people who, you know, it's affected to some extent. It's not often comedians, but it is sometimes comedians. Usually they have to do something bad, really, don't they?
I just don't have that much of an opinion. Yeah. About this. Like, I think it'll all be fine. I think I've never been told my comedy was, like, racist or sexist, you know? And, like, that's what everyone's worried about. Yeah. Everyone's worried about something being racist or sexist or homophobic. That's what everyone's so worried about that. Everyone's like, you're an edgy guy. And I'm like, I mean, I've never had that problem. I don't know what you think. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know.
No.
Maybe.
I don't think it's sort of interesting. I think it's interesting that the way taste change. I mean, we had Matt Lucas on a few weeks and months ago, and you know, that's he's talking about the stuff he did 10, 15 years ago, and like that's the thing. Like some of that stuff that people were doing 10, 15 years ago, where where it felt like we'd got to a certain place and you could push beyond and do the jokes now because we were in a safe and happy place, and then realise, oh, no, we're not really quite there yet, you know. There's presumably there'll be a point where racism no longer exists and people will be able to joke about stuff again. And homophobia no longer exists and you'll be able to joke about it because it will seem so ludicrous, you know.
Yeah, but, I mean, I don't know if that's going to be in our lifetime.
I don't think it will be, Bobby. I don't think it will be, but it's you know, that's what it, ultimately there's the way that comedy can bring people together, like joking about certain subjects is a way of, I mean, being inclusive as much as being exclusive. There's just two types of jokes, isn't
it? And I think there's things I probably said on stage like 10 years ago that I would not say now.
Yeah, yeah.
That maybe now wouldn't even get a laugh because people's sensibilities have changed.
And the problem is those things...
And I'm not going to repeat them now.
No. But the problem is those things still exist. That's where it's weird. Comedy used to just disappear. And certainly that kind of comedy. The comedy in the moment, it wasn't filmed, it wasn't tweeted.
Exactly.
It just disappeared.
Now there's a catalogue of every tweet.
You can find the things, you know. The other day was the 10th anniversary of the death of Michael Jackson. And on the death of Michael Jackson, Twitter was kind of a wonderful thing. So people could mourn if they wanted, but you could do lots of jokes about... If you wanted, and there was jokes, and I did a whole evening of jokes about the coverage of it, not really about him so much, just about the hysterical coverage of it. And I look back at that now, and I think, oh, you know, if you did that now, that would be in that, you know, you'd be in the papers if I tweeted a lot of the things I tweeted now. Genuinely, I think just because people go, how dare he, you know, Michael Jackson's just died, how dare this comedian do anything, you know. I did something about... now I'll say it and now it'll be in the papers. This is good. But it's all on my blog, but it's I did something about, I wonder if Gary Glitter dies, people will just forget about all the other stuff he did. But it was mainly about the reaction to... there was a thing that came in. It was at the time I was doing Hitler Moustache, and so I did a section about it in Hitler Moustache. But there was a newspaper, the reporter saying, diehard fans are gathering at Michael Jackson's house. And so I tweeted, you know, what are the diehard fans doing there? They shoot with the Actors Army class. And got a big routine out of that. But it was just that wonderful thing on Twitter that you could be sick and no one would go, oh, you know, oh, watch out what you're doing. And people, like, on occasion, people go, oh, well, you know, come on. He's definitely not a paedophile. He's innocent.
Yeah, he's just the only adult in the history of adults that enjoys sleeping with other people's children and not fucking them. The only one ever. He's the only one in the history of people, or he's a pedophile. I think it's probably the first thing I said. He had a hard childhood.
He did. He did. Right, we're going to have to go in a second. It's been...
Wait, can I say, who would have thought Michael Jackson jokes would still be being said in 2019?
Yeah.
They died in the 90s, and I thought, well, they're dead, and now they're back.
Yeah. Well, even on the dead, but if people are getting cross and say, when he's dead, people should have been complaining about the jokes when he was alive. There was a lot of jokes when he was alive, when he might have heard them. The minute he's dead, it's fine, isn't it?
I think it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine anyway, but if you're going to get upset on his behalf...
Do it when he's alive.
Do it when, don't you know, be upset when he's alive. Stop the jokes when he's alive. Once he's dead, all bets are off.
Yeah. I mean, I agree.
Yeah. Look, it's been really lovely having you. You're going to Birmingham. So, I mean...
I have a gig in Birmingham.
If anyone wants to go along.
Yeah.
You're there tomorrow night as well.
I'm there tomorrow night, yes.
The Glee Club, fantastic club.
Great club.
So thank you very much for coming along and doing this. I hope you've had a nice time.
I had a great time. Thanks for having me.
Ladies and gentlemen, give a massive round of applause to the amazing Bobby Miller!
Thank you so much, everyone.
We'll be back next week with more. Go and have a drink in a week. See ya. You have been listening to Rahalastapa with me, Rich Tang, and my guest, Bobby Mair. Thank you to Pest for playing this music for us. We're indebted to the Warwick Arts Centre for allowing us to record here. That was very nice. I think we paid them. I'm not sure. Thank you to my executive producer for this show, Andy Wilson. I'm indebted to my producer, James Hingley, and my series producer, Ben Walker. This is a Fuzz, GoFasterStripe.com, and Sky Potato production. Go to richherring.com/gigs and find out if I'm gigging with Rahel Ostaba near to you or just doing stand-up comedy. Who knows? I might be dead by the time you hear this. Bye!
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks for listening. richardherring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.